tonight, I am so thrilled with the story that we come to in the Gospel of John. So last week, we talked about Jesus as the light of the world. Jesus is the light that brings security, so we should rest in him. Jesus is the light that guides, so we should follow him. Jesus is the light that purifies, so we should yield to him. And Jesus is the light that enlightens, so we should trust in him. And that was all from a teaching context last week. This week, we're going to come to like Jesus enacting these principles, living them out, in a rather remarkable, miraculous story. So if you have a Bible, turn with me to John chapter 9. John chapter 9, starting in verse 1. As he went along, Jesus, he saw a man blind from birth. His disciples asked him, "Rabbi, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind?" "Neither this man nor his parents sinned," said Jesus, "but this happened so that the work of God might be displayed in his life. As long as it is day, we must do the work of him who sent me. Night is coming when no one can work. While I am in the world, I am the light of the world." I think that buzz may be coming from the laptop. Maybe unplug that. There we go. Now, this is an unusual place for us to begin the story. It has to do with perceptions and assumptions that are made in culture. And they see this guy in their traditional culture. They just see if this man is blind from birth, if he's got a disability, it must be because of sin. Maybe something he did in the womb, he yanked on the umbilical cord or something in a mean way, or maybe something his parents did, he was conceived in adultery perhaps, or in some other sinful way, this child has come into the world. And we look at that, and we're like, that's just crazy. Those stupid, ignorant, throwback people, how could they? And we judge them until we start to think about the ways that we do similar things. We see a homeless person, we assume that he's lazy. Maybe we meet someone with a sexual disease and we assume that they're promiscuous and or foolish. They didn't know how to do things the proper way. We see someone who goes to an unprestigious college and assume that they're stupider than us. We see and we assume that we know all the factors that went into making things the way that they are and the way that we would never want them to be in our life. And so these guys, these disciples, they see this guy. Actually, notice this. They didn't see the guy at first. What does it say? As they went along, he saw a man blind from birth. Jesus noticed them, noticed him. The disciples, they noticed him, noticed him. This is actually a very significant aspect of Jesus' life. He says, "I am the light of the world," as we saw last week. What does that mean? It means that not only does Jesus change our lives, he changes what we see, he changes our perception. Jesus sees this man, and he views him not, for the disciples, he's like a theoretical problem to be solved. How could the world be this way? For Jesus, the man is an object of compassion. C.S. Lewis, a man who I love to quote, and if you've never read anything by him, we have a free book for him, by him, out on the table that we'd love for you to take if you're not a Christian. He said, "I believe in Christianity as I believe the sun has risen, not only because I see it, but because by it I see everything else. I believe in Christianity as I believe the sun has risen, not only because I see it, but because by it I see everything else." Jesus notices, and he calls us to notice too. He goes on in the next verse, "As long as it is day, we must do the work of him who sent me. Night is coming when no one can work. While I am in the world, I am the light of the world." Night is coming, Jesus says. The time when Jesus will be dead. 3 days, he will be in the grave. And the disciples must walk through those dark 3 days on their own. But this is not then. And now is not then. It's the year 2015, and Jesus is risen from the grave. And so it is day, and we must do the work of him who sent us. And so tonight, I need to ask you the question that was implicit for those disciples 2,000 years ago. He said to those in his presence, "Do you see what I see? Do you notice what I notice? Do you perceive what I perceive?" Tonight, do you notice the things that Jesus notices? Do you see the things that catch his attention? If not, perhaps you're living in the night when you cannot see. I actually got a testimony about this moments ago. Adrian and Alphonse were walking back from there. This is within the last 30 minutes this testimony came to pass. And they were walking along and they saw a guy. Walking along, shirtless, backpack on, not looking like a student. He was sort of stumbling. And they stopped and they noticed and they talked to him and they prayed for him. And what I want to submit to you is that is what followers of Jesus do. They notice the people that Jesus notices. Now, I want to take this one more step. Jesus notices you. Jesus notices your pain. I don't know what you're walking through, but I dare say that most of us have at least one place in our life where we feel hurt. Maybe it's a jacked up family situation that you're walking through from afar, texting back and forth with your parents. Maybe it's a romantic disappointment as Valentine's Day approaches. Maybe it's academic stress. Maybe it's some sort of financial challenge that just looms over you. I want to assure you, Jesus notices. He sees. You are not alone, and you are not unnoticed. So Jesus sees this blind man, and he says, look, we got to do something about this. It's daylight. It's shining, and so we must be about the Father's business. And so what does he do? Next verse. Having said this, Jesus spit on the ground, made some mud with saliva, and put it on the man's eyes. Ooh. Go, he told him. Wash in the pool of Siloam. This word means sent. So the man went and washed and came home seeing. One detail you need to notice right now, because it comes into it later. This man has not seen Jesus. He was blind the entire time he interacted with Jesus. All he did was hear the voice. We'll come back to that later. Second, I want you to notice how Jesus does the miracle. In an extremely inefficient and disgusting way. He gathers dust in his hands and he spits into it to make mud. Now, I don't know how much spit you generate on one typical hop, but I'm telling you, for me, this is what it's like. Hold on. Plup. Plup. One more. Plup. Bam. Smear it over the face. This is a prolonged, disgusting, attention-grabbing miracle. If I started doing that out on campus one day, everyone would look at me and step back, but keep looking, because you're like, what is this crazy man about to do? Something weird is about to happen, but I don't want to be near him because I think he's going to give me cooties. Here's what I want you to notice. The work of Jesus in our lives is very often messy. We know how we want it to go. Spiritual gifts should manifest in this way. Guidance should come to me that way. I should find romance in this particular scenario. Jesus messes all that up. He ministers in his way, and it can be hard for us. And so my question for you is, will you receive Jesus' messy work in your life? Or will you insist it be done your way or no way? Because God is very often happy to honor that desire. Now, I want you to catch something very significant about the way that Jesus does this miracle. Back in the garden, when God created Adam, he formed him from the dust of the ground and then put something of himself into it to bring him to life. He breathed. In this story, Jesus gathers the dust of the earth and puts something of himself into it, spits, in order to bring new eyes to this man. The man followed the instructions to the letter and was able to see. Now, there is a hidden miracle in this story. The overt miracle is amazing. But I want you to catch this. A man blind from birth, we now know, does not possess the visual processing center in the brain that he needs to be able to grasp what stimuli are coming into his brain. People who have sight restored often have a season they have to walk through in order to learn to process visual data. Jesus healed this man far more comprehensively than anyone at the time understood. He did not only what was obvious, he did what was necessary for the obvious to come to pass. When Jesus does a work in your life, there will often be parts of it you will not become aware of for years later. Until you start to see that he not only did what you noticed, he did a deep inner work that was necessary for what you noticed to even make sense. One other thing I wanted to point out, the man obeyed without understanding all the details and significance of why Jesus gave him the command that he gave. This is what the man saw. nothing. This is what the man heard.
This man, he did not sin. Light of day.
What? Now go wash that off. In the pool, whose name means scent. Why not just rub it right here? Why not go to this fountain over here? Why not just take a cup of water? There's spit mud in my eyes. But what does a man do? He does exactly what Jesus commanded. And I think that brings up a very important spiritual principle that I struggle with sometimes. My understanding, the whys of Jesus' commands, is not a precondition for my obedience to Jesus' commands. Very often I find that I gain understanding in the obedience. There have been times I've never understood fully why Jesus commanded me to do something. But nonetheless, I was obligated to obey. College students, Stanford students who love figuring things out. By all means, when you can discern the reasons of the Lord, do it. It's great. Recognize that there will be times you will have no idea. You are no less obligated to obey when you don't understand his reasons than when you do. So we go on. The man comes back and he can see, but Jesus isn't there anymore. His neighbors and those who had formerly seen him begging asked, "Isn't that the same guy who used to sit and beg?" Some claimed that he was. Others said, nah, he only looks like him. But he himself said, "I'm the man." "How then were your eyes opened?" they demanded. He replied, "The man they called Jesus made some mud and put it on my eyes. He told me to go to Siloam and wash. So I went and washed and then I could see." "Where is this man?" they asked him. "I don't know," he said. This is a funny scene. It's like you can imagine it in like a classic slapstick kind of comedy, right? So there are consistent places that homeless people get. If you walk around this community at all, you'll just know, like, okay, there is the guy who's at the corner of Sand Hill and El Camino. He's there almost every day at the same time. And just, you know that guy in that context. If you bump into him in Safeway, you're like, "I recognize you." No. Or like whatever it is, like, you just get certain things a certain way. And this guy especially, he looks different. How does he look different? Well, first, he's no longer walking around tentatively. He knows where he's going. So he's like walking with purpose. He's got confidence about it. Also, I mean, I imagine, for the first time in his life, he washes in the pool. He opens his eyes there with the water. He can see. What's the first thing he sees? His own reflection. For the first time he sees himself, he's like, "Oh man, my hair is a mess. And oh, look at that." So he looks different. And he comes back and he's like, it looks like, "Nah, I can't be the guy. That guy has a limp. This guy's walking straight. Maybe he was scamming the whole time." No, we've known since birth. He's had this birth. No, it's, I don't know. And you can see it going back and forth. You can understand their perplexity. And the guy's like, "It's me." But he looked different because Jesus had touched his life. Do you look different because of Jesus? Do your friends, especially if you have come to Christ in college, you had a renewal of your faith in college, have your friends noticed a difference in your life? Do you walk with new purpose and confidence? Now, so once everyone finally accepts that it's the guy, they're floored. "What happened? Jesus happened? Where's Jesus?" "I don't know." And for all he knows, literally Jesus could be standing right there, smiling. He wouldn't know. He's never seen Jesus. And by the way, notice the way he describes Jesus the first time. The man that they call Jesus. So the story goes on. They brought to the Pharisees the man who had been blind. Now, the day on which Jesus had made the mud and opened the man's eyes was a Sabbath. Therefore, the Pharisees also asked him how he received his sight. "He put mud on my eyes," the man replied, "and I washed and now I see." Some of the Pharisees said, "This man's not from God. He does not keep the Sabbath." But others asked, "How can a sinner do such miraculous signs?" So they were divided. Finally, they turned again to the blind man. "What have you to say about him? It was your eyes he opened." The man replied, "He's a prophet." Now, dum-dum-dum, the plot thickens. Jesus did this miracle on the Sabbath. Not only did he do the miracle on the Sabbath, he did it in a way that deliberately violated Sabbath rules. As you probably heard, if you've been around church at all before, talking about Sabbath stuff, not only did they have the rule from the Old Testament, people had added their own rules to sort of like make it clear, what does it mean not to do work on the Sabbath day? And one of the main rules, well, one of the rules for agriculture is you can't make mud. You can't mix it up. And so what does Jesus do? Now, Jesus, how could Jesus have done a miracle? Well, how's he doing the miracles? He raised Lazarus from the dead by saying, "Hey, Lazarus, come out." He walked in the water just by stepping on it. all kinds of people was like, be healed, be healed. You know, any kind of ways. The only time he makes mud is when he heals this guy on the Sabbath. And it seems like he's doing that. So let me tell you a secret about myself. I can be a bit of a punk. I sometimes do things just to push people. And I recognize it when I see it. In this story, Jesus is being a punk. He is deliberately provoking the religious leaders. So they have an argument about it. And both sides have a reasonable case. So they turn to this man. They say, what do you think now? And now, notice how he began. He said, the man they called Jesus. Now he's starting to think more about it. He's had time to reflect. He's listening to this debate back and forth. He's heard the pros and cons. He's like, no, he's a prophet. Jesus is a prophet. The Jews still did not believe that he'd been blind and had received his sight until they sent for the man's parents. Is this your son, they asked? Is this the one you say was born blind? How is it that now he can see? We know he's our son, the parents answered. We know he was born blind, but how he can see now or who opened his eyes, we don't know. Ask him, he's of age. He'll speak for himself. His parents said this because they were afraid of the Jews, for already the Jews had decided that anyone who acknowledged that Jesus was the Christ would be put out of the synagogue. That was why his parents said, he is of age. Ask him. Mom and dad threw him under the bus. They're like, clearly God's got your back. You're okay. Us, man, we got to make our way in this life. I'm not prepared for social awkwardness. Your own little religious fanaticism is all good for you, man. I'm over here. You'll calm down in a few years and you can come back. You know, so I want you to catch the Pharisees. They're being reasonable. I mean, if you just saw a man walking and saying, I was blind, but I've been healed, one of your first questions would be, was he really blind? Now, why would the Pharisees not know this? Because they live on the good side of the tracks. And this man, he's begging. He's not someone they pass on a regular basis. They have a vague memory. It could be the guy. But even his neighbors were like, that's not the guy. It looks like Johnny. No, it's not Johnny. I think it's Johnny. Johnny's blind. That man can see. But that's the thing. He's just saying he's been healed. I think it's Johnny. You know, even his neighbors weren't so sure. It took him a while, right? Pharisees are like, it's a reasonable question. Do due diligence. So the parents come up, and also, then you do diligence, and the parents are like, no, he's been born blind. And so, we don't know how it happened. We weren't there. Ask him. So they call the guy again, verse 24. A second time they summoned the man and said, give glory to God. We know this man is a sinner. He replied, whether he's a sinner or not, I don't know. One thing I do know, I was blind, but now I see. The religious leaders have made up their mind. They started with uncertainty and became convinced that Jesus sinned and therefore cannot be from God or speak for God. And this man's watching all this play out before him. And the same evidence that is pushing them away is pushing him towards. And he's starting to get ticked off. You can see it in his response. He's getting testy. He's like, hello, I was freaking blind and now I see. And you're giving me these theological limits. And that's the thing. They give him a theological supper. This man sinned. We can show it to you from Exodus and Deuteronomy. Boom, 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 boom. Therefore, we can't speak for God. And the man's like, look, I don't know how to answer your question. Let's return to the main matter at hand. This morning, I could not see, just as I had not seen for the last every morning. And now I'm talking to you, and I'm looking you in the eye. Something happened. I'm giving credit to Jesus. Now, here is a pro tip for you as you seek to be an ambassador for Christ on campus. You will get theological questions you will not know how to answer. Your response, what kinds? Well, why doesn't God answer every prayer the way that I want to? If there's a good God, why did this happen in my life? Why isn't God visible? Hey, what about the walls of Jericho or whatever? And here's what you need to do. First say, if you don't know, you should be motivated to learn the answer to that question because you should love God with all your mind. People ask you a question, you should want to get an answer first. Second, return to the matter at hand. Say, look, that's a great question. I don't even know. But I do know something significant. Jesus changed my life in this way. And I think that's worth talking about. And I'm not talking about Jericho. I'm not talking about Joshua. I'm not talking about the Canaanites. I'm talking about Jesus. And so let's direct our attention there. The more that you can direct the attention in the conversation to the focal point of Christ, as a general rule, the better things go. So they asked him, it says, verse 26, what did he do to you? How did he open your eyes? They're fixated on Jesus' technique. It's the fourth time in this story people have used the word how. Not who, but how. What was the technique Jesus used? What was the methodology he employed? Is God operating within our comfort zone or not? The man answered, I've told you already. You did not listen. Why do you want to hear it again? Do you want to become his disciples too? He's getting straight up cheeky now. Because it's clear what they're trying to do. They're hoping that either he will change his testimony so they can dismiss the whole matter, or that he will add some new detail that will allow them to conclusively be satisfied that Jesus is a sinner. Like, he spit on a baby and ground it up and shoved it in my eyes or something. And so he says, I'm done. This is going nowhere. Rather than playing your game, I'm going to start my own. And then he gets puckish. He's been discipled by Jesus well. And so he starts pushing back and does something deliberate, provocative. Do you want to be his disciples too? Then they hurled insults at him and said, you're this fellow's disciple. We're disciples of Moses. Which is basically them saying, your mom went to college. We know that God spoke to Moses. But as for this fellow, we don't even know where he comes from. The man answered, now that is remarkable. You don't know where this man comes from, yet he opened my eyes. We know that God does not listen to sinners. He listens to the godly man and does his will. Nobody has ever heard of opening the eyes of a man born blind. If this man were not from God, he could do nothing. In other words, you guys sure seem to know a lot about a guy you claim to know nothing about. Choose. You know about Jesus or you don't. Now, to me, the evidence is clear. He's from God. You'd have to be blind not to see it. Trust me, I know. Healing me is something that Satan couldn't do or wouldn't do. He can't create. He can only destroy or alter. I have new sight. Therefore, Jesus is sent from God. I want you to notice this. That argument is not airtight, and it is not conclusive. How could you doubt that argument? Well, you've got Pharaoh's magicians in the Old Testament doing miracles. You've got Balaam the false prophet. In theory, someone could do these works and not represent God. We see in the book of Revelation there's a false prophet at the end of time who does miracles and leads people astray. The man makes a somewhat false argument. Now, I want to be clear. I don't think it's a bad argument. It's an argument, not a proof. In proofs, you have to cover every detail. A squared plus B squared equals C squared. I can prove it, right? In arguments, you just have to make a reasonable case. He makes a reasonable case. Here's something I've noticed about some of you. You are so scared that when you talk about your faith that you will not have a perfect argument that you say nothing. I just want to submit to be more like this guy. Say what you can. And if someone pushes back, you push back as far as you can, work it through, and just be the witness you can be, direct attention back to Jesus. But if you wait for the absolute perfect knockout words, you'll be waiting for the rest of your life. Instead, testify to what you know from the position that you're at. To this they replied, you were steeped in sin at birth. How dare you lecture us? And they threw him out. Now, I want you, they implicitly accept the fact they previously doubted. In other words, they say you're steeped in sin at birth, like the disciples, you were born blind. You're a sinner. Be gone. Unclean, unclean. So they accept that, but now they move so far beyond the original ambivalence they had that even though their original point of doubt has been clarified, they even accepted that they're no longer open to considering the truth of Jesus. Jesus heard they had thrown the man out. And when he found him, he said, do you believe in the Son of Man? Who is he, sir? The man asked. Tell me, so I may believe in him. Jesus said, you've now seen him. In fact, he's the one speaking with you. Then the man said, Lord, I believe. And he worshiped him. Jesus finds him. Earlier, I mentioned that Jesus notices hurting people. I want to add, Jesus seeks out rejected people. Jesus is seeking you. This is the first time that the man has knowingly laid eyes on Jesus. But he recognizes that voice. Wouldn't you? The voice that healed him. The voice he has already said, that man is a prophet from God, comes up and says, do you have faith in the Son of Man? Not yet, but you just point at him and I will believe all in him. I'm your God. I was blind, but now I see. Jesus says, I'm the Son of Man. Then the man said, Lord, I believe and worshiped him. The man began by saying, the man that they called Jesus, he healed me. I think he's a prophet. You know, this guy, He's sent from God. And he culminates in, Lord, I worship you. The Pharisees started with confusion and went to skepticism and rejection. The man started with confusion and rose to the heights of faith. Why? Jesus said, for judgment I've come into this world, so that the blind will see, and those who see will become blind. Some Pharisees who were with him heard him say this and asked, oh, what, are we blind too? Jesus said, if you were blind, you would not be guilty of sin. But now that you claim to see, your guilt remains. Jesus has different effects on different people. Sunlight softens butter and hardens mud. The same water that boils the egg tenderizes the carrot. How we respond to stimuli often tells us far more about ourselves than it does about the stimulus itself. Jesus is the light of the world. He will either guide you or he will blind you. If you find yourself in your spiritual journey at a place where you do not see yourself as someone who struggles with sin from time to time, if you think of yourself as being beyond the point of immature and simple sinfulness, cry out for mercy. I want to warn you that if you think you can see, you're in grave danger of being declared blind by God. Martin Luther, the great reformer, put it this way in a letter to a friend. Beware of ever aspiring to such purity that you do not want to seem to yourself or to actually be a sinner. For Christ dwells only in sinners. Worship team, come back up. I've got a few closing thoughts, and we're going to go to worship. Tonight, we've seen a lived out example of what it means for Jesus to become the light of the world in one person's life. The man was born blind and then was given the great gift of sight by Jesus, the light. I asked you several questions throughout the evening. I want to sort of bring them back together right now. I want to start with this one. The one at the end. Has Jesus been opening your eyes lately? Were you someone, you would say in a very real sense, I was spiritually blind earlier this year. I was not someone who was following in the light of Jesus. I was not his. I was not a disciple. I was not a Christian. If Jesus has opened your eyes, follow the example of the blind man. Fall at his feet. Worship him and call him Lord. Tonight can be the night that you experience the fullness of what God has for you. Second, Jesus is the light of the world. In what ways has he changed the way that you notice those around you? If when I said earlier that Jesus' followers notice like their Lord notices, something came to your mind that you need to lay before the Lord, I invite you to do that in a few moments when I open a prayer. Do you see what Jesus sees? Do you notice the hurting people that Jesus notices? When I talked about the way that Jesus does messy work in our lives, is there something Jesus has been doing in your life that you've been resisting because it doesn't fit inside your comfort zone? Yield. Open your palms to him and say, Lord, whatever you have for me, I want it. No matter how outside the box it seems, I'll receive what you have for me. Are you obedient to him even when you don't understand all of his reasons? When his commands to you don't make sense the way you'd like them to, do you nonetheless have this heart that just says, you know what, I know God exists, and I know he is good. He knows things that I don't know. So if he says something I don't understand, the problem's in me, not him. I will obey. Finally, do you feel unnoticed? Do you feel rejected? Jesus notices you, and he seeks you out. Receive his ministry tonight. Bow your heads and join me in prayer. Father, we're all at different places. We all have different needs. But I know this. We all need to see you more clearly. We all need a deeper revelation of who you are. Like this man, we need better eyesight to perceive your work in our life.
So God, open our eyes.
Whatever way you need to, open our eyes.
And Lord, use us to do things on earth for your glory. It is day.
So we must do the work of him who sent you.
Noticing the unnoticed. Loving the rejected. Testifying to the truth. Receiving your grace. Help us in Jesus' name. Tonight, if you're ready to become a follower of Jesus, you've not yet taken that step, but tonight's your night. You're ready. I'd just like to know so that I can pray for you. I'm not going to do anything weird beyond that, like call you up or do any other things you might have seen in other religious settings. I just want to know that you're here and you're ready so I can pray for you. Anyone here, if you just slip your hand up so I can pray for you.